Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a five-star review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls, email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with questions or advertising inquiries. And I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Cody, this is rock bottom, right?
Gotta be close to it if it's not, Sean. A 98-91 loss for the Bulls on the road to the hapless Orlando Magic, who I believe entered the night about 18 games under 500 or so. And the Bulls had a 13-point lead in the third quarter, and then it all went south. Typical Bulls problems, typical Bulls fashion. Did not get it done on the offensive end, lacked intensity in the defensive end, just doing a lot of Bulls things, not coming up with any crucial important plays when they needed. Jimmy Butler went scoreless in the fourth quarter after scoring 21 points and having 9 assists in the first three quarters. Didn't have an assist in the fourth quarter either, so wasn't making plays in any regard. Stagnant, iso ball. Sean, this can't keep happening for the Bulls, but it keeps happening, and now they're 31-33.
And it's not just that they've lost three games in a row, it's that they lose games the exact same way. Their offense looks good in the first half, and then it just completely stagnates in the second half. And
is that coaching?
I don't know.
What's that on when the same thing keeps happening? Is that on the players, or is that on the coach?
Well, Hoiberg, to his credit, has been trying to mix stuff up. He put Joffrey Laverne in there for his first real extended run today, but I don't know. It just, these guys, they look disjointed, and I think it bears repeating, and the reason this is such rock bottom, it's not just like that they lost, this is their third loss in a row, but this Magic team is awful. And that's a thing, like, Jeff Green, played the most minutes off the bench for them with 19.
Sean was being really hard on the Magic as we were sitting on the couch watching this game. Sean was just, you only get, half of your fire tweets on Twitter, actually. Like, Sean's got a lot more.
I got a lot left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, in the holster. And Sean's not high on the Magic, so he's considering this the worst Bulls loss of the season, which you'd have to stack up there with bullying. It was at a 21-point home lead to the Timberwolves, a 10-point lead at home to the Hawks with under 3 minutes left, and probably a 25-point lead at Dallas. Were the other three games we might throw in there?
The Phoenix and Minnesota losses to end the road trip, the two Bucks losses in December.
Oh, the one where they scored 69 points? Man, you're going deep in the reservoir there. I guess, yeah. So, there's a selection of a good, six or seven games to choose from this year. You think?
There's a lot.
It's the worst. Certainly, I'll say this much. If it's not the worst, it's one of the worst timed losses. The Bulls played without Dwayne Wade because of a thigh injury. That's kept him out a couple games now, and they're hopeful, I guess, he'll play Friday when they come back home and host the Rockets. That's no guarantee, obviously. Jimmy Butler didn't do shoot around on Wednesday morning in Orlando because he wasn't feeling well. He did play, and he looked like himself for the first three quarters, really, but then just didn't get the job done in the fourth quarter. And unlike the other night when the Pistons blitzed Jimmy Butler a lot and forced the ball out of his hands, the Magic weren't quite as aggressive in this game. So it was really Jimmy just, I don't know, maybe some of it was stamina, because if you're sick, it's probably more likely to catch up with you in the 48th minute of the game, or I guess he didn't play that many minutes, but late in the game, you get the picture there, than it is maybe in the first half. But at the same time, the Bulls just don't have answers here. It's a game that Paul Zipser didn't give him much. Denzel Valentine was pretty bad, 2 of 8 from the field. And there's just no consistency. Campaign only had 4 points in 17 minutes or so. And it's just disjointed. I feel like we just said, I feel like we're almost just copy-pasting a lot of things we said in the last podcast, and maybe even the one before that against the Clippers, where the offense, stagnant, like we said, ISO heavy, not making plays, and we're just running back the same thing here on the Bulls. But I don't know what else you say about it.
I still think the heel is bothering Jimmy.
Why?
Because this is how he's been. He has not been the same guy since after the All-Star break, or since before. He had the heel injury during the road trip in February. He comes back he's been pretty passive. I mean, he took 21 shots tonight. You can't say that this was a passive Jimmy Butler game, but he still ran out of gas late after, you know, the way he's played the last couple of weeks is just, it's, I feel like something's up there.
7 of 21 from the field, and he just, he didn't feel like he was in the mix much late, and there were several plays where the Bulls, there's several plays we need to go over late in this one. One of them was Robin Lopez blocked a shot, I think about 3 minutes left, around there, maybe just under, out of bounds, and the Magic had 0.7 left on the shot clock, up 2 points. And there was a timeout out of that. And they did the inbound play where they circled one guy through the lane, waited, and then threw a lob to Aaron Gordon, not at the rim, because the Bulls did do a good job of putting Lopez right at the rim and not allowing that. But still, he jumped up, caught the ball over Joffrey Laverne, and shot a short shot that was probably, what, 6 feet or something like that, 8 feet. That was a good look. And it's almost just you're bashing your head into it again. And it's like Fred had to have told him that was coming. Right? Like, there's only one play you can run there that is a high percentage play, and that's getting the ball to a guy who can jump high right around the hoop or close to it. Otherwise, you just make him inbound the ball to Bismack Biyombo or Elfrid Payton, who was terrific with the triple-double there, but obviously isn't a guy you want shooting a fadeaway shot with 0.7 seconds left on the shot clock. But it's just fundamental breakdown there. Like, how does that happen? At some point, you know, the Bulls' basketball IQ is bad. I thought both teams' basketball IQ was bad in this game. I don't watch the Magic enough to know if that's always the case, but I'll say this. Well, I assume it's the case because they're pretty bad at basketball, too. But how many transition opportunities did these teams have where they had numbers and then messed it up? Maybe they still made the shot, but they turned transition opportunities into contested shots when it was a 2-on-1, 3-on-2, or an advantage with a trailer with all this momentum toward the hoop, and somehow the ball ends up with a guy shooting an 18-footer with a hand in his face on 18 seconds left on the shot clock.
How just overpassing, yeah, I don't know.
What was this game?
Speaking of fast breaks, we need to talk about the 27-5. That was the disparity in fast break points. And
yes,
there were a lot of times in this game where, you know, the Bulls make a shot. I think there was one time Jimmy Butler hits a three, and they all just kind of jog back on defense, and I think it was Elfrid Payton goes and gets a layup.
It's a good point by you. I was just hard on imagining their fast break. They could have had 40 fast break points if they made better passes sometimes in transition. But that's not on Hoiberg. None of that's on the coaching staff. Your team made a shot. Five players on the floor. As one unit, we're paying attention, and the Bulls made a shot. And then something between a jog and a lope or a walk. And what's that? What's that thing in Olympic racing where, like, you gotta have one foot on the ground, like racewalking or whatever? Have you ever heard that sport? Like racewalking? You have to have one foot on the ground at all times or you're disqualified from the gold medal and silver medal.
I don't know if you've seen it.
But, like, it's like the goofiest thing. It's like watching shoppers go through the mall at a really fast pace. It's an Olympic sport, actually, or something. That's what the Bulls are basically doing. They were walking, jogging back on defense, and it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to have the Magic just inbound the ball to Elfrid Payton and push the ball up the floor on the right side of the court and just kind of go straight to the block, put his shoulder down a tad, and shoot a little bank shot in for basically a layup and get fouled too, and you don't have a big man back protecting the paint, and you don't have a guard picking him up at half court or the three-point line, wherever that is. Like, it's just inexcusable. That's 100% completely on the players. And you mentioned several times, I think between that 3-point play and a couple cases, I'm pretty sure maybe 7 points off the top of my head that the Magic got in this game just by doing that. Basically, what the Bulls is about. Oh, seven.
And at this point in the season, like this is the kind of stuff, you know, if this happens early on in the season, you can say, okay, you know, they're still trying to feel out, you know, what their plays are, what all this stuff. It's March. It's March. They're hanging on to the 8th seed in the playoffs, which they still are in, by the way. But, like, this is not the time to just be having these defensive breakdowns or just this lack of effort. It's I'm still on playoff optimist island for the Bulls, but I'm maybe looking for a life raft. I'm not there yet, but I'm getting there. I'm open to the possibility.
Well, let's talk about that. When we clicked record on this podcast, the Heat were putting the final touches on a 108-101 win over the Hornets. So as we speak, on this Wednesday night, the Heat have clawed within a half game of the Bulls. The Bulls are in eighth. The Heat, a half game behind them. The Bucks, as we speak, are up 11 on the Knicks with 5 minutes to go in the game. They can claw within a half game, too. So no matter the outcome here, the Bulls are really feeling the pressure now in the playoff race. And we've mentioned, we know they play good against good teams usually, but still, Houston coming up, then on the road against the Celtics, then I think they're at Charlotte.
And then they've got that. Memphis, Utah, Toronto,
Washington's in there somewhere. This is a rough stretch. The Bulls are two games under 500, and let's just think about it in general win terms. Like we've been saying, I mean, the Eastern Conference playoff race here is hinted at maybe someone getting in at 40 and 42 this year because these eight seeds often now currently are a game or two below 500 in the 7 and 8 spots. So maybe 40 wins gets in, but that means you got to go 40 and 42, and you could easily be 3 or 4 games under 500, maybe 4 games under 500 after this rough stretch coming up, maybe even 5, and then have to claw back up.
Right.
And I know the April schedule is so soft for the Bulls. It's the easiest April schedule, which is a half month in the NBA regular season calendar, but it's the easiest one in the NBA.
But the Bulls have demonstrated that they cannot beat good bad teams.
That's correct. Just like the Magic. Can't beat.
This is like, okay, they've got the Knicks, who they've lost to twice this season in April. They've got the Sixers, who, I mean, I guess they should be able to beat the Sixers.
They
got to
play the Bucks once more, too, and we know the Bucks are the youngest and most athletic team the Bulls seem to have ever seen.
And they're also kind of in the playoff mix.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. Going to be a half game out here.
Tony Snell balling for them?
If they win. And we should mention that, the Tony Snell thing. We brought this up earlier. And this isn't specific to Tony Snell, but I made the comment. Looking the big picture here, and let's put a couple pieces together. Jaren Grant continues to shoot the ball.
He's been
well
good
from deep. I believe he's 21 of 41 now on three-pointers in the last 16 games. Something like shooting 45% since he was put in the starting lineup, which is significant to me because that means when his minutes started mirroring Jimmy Butler's minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He's been shooting really well from three. Had 13 points in this game. He was their offense in the fourth quarter. I believe it was 7 points he had in the frame. And he looked good. He was atrocious defensively in a key sequence in which he let Elfrid Payton grab a rebound putback. That's not acceptable. That was awful. He's got to put a body on somebody. He lags defensively sometimes. In other cases, there's no doubt when Elfrid Payton's throwing up a triple-double, and obviously you pointed out to Magic fans you don't think Elfrid Payton's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
No.
Not exactly high on him over there, Sean. That's on Jaren. Like, he was getting roasted, like, defensively, but he has shown signs offensively. So my question was, if you're looking big picture here, can Jaren Grant play alongside Jimmy Butler if you are going to keep Jimmy Butler and not trade him? I think so. I don't know what you think, Sean. But then the next part of that is you have to get another really good defender in the backcourt, a 3-and-D guy next to Jimmy, so you can spread the floor, knock down shots when he opens up space, and then take the defensive responsibility off of him at the other end. And Dwayne Wade's none of those things. You know what I mean? He's not a 3-and-D guy at all.
No, he's not.
But how many more wins could the Bulls have? Like, what's their ceiling if they just put a good 3-and-D guy next to Jimmy Butler? Someone say that shoots 41% from three-pointers like Tony Snell does in Milwaukee and plays solid defense.
Well, the name you brought up when we were just watching the game and talking about it is like a guy like who were hypothetically available, a guy like Danny Green in San Antonio. It just would open up so much because that's a guy. I mean, even the few guys on the Bulls roster who are quote-unquote good shooters, and I don't even know off the top of my head who those guys are at this point because there aren't many of them, but like there's nobody that you have to just respect their shot. And that just makes it so much more difficult for Jimmy to be able to drive the hoop and do other things he wants to do. And he's asked to do so much on the defensive end also. That like, you know, when San Antonio, like if they want to give Kawhi Leonard a break from guarding, you know, James Harden the whole game, they can just put him on him in the final minute because they have guys like Danny Green that they can.
Didn't they kind of do that?
They did that
the other
night, yeah.
Where he doesn't have to carry that load forever. So like, then Kawhi's in the fourth quarter. He gets not a great look at a three. It was contested, but he steps up and knocks down a huge three-pointer in crunch time and then is checking James Harden on the other end because guess what? Kawhi had plenty of energy to still jump up and nail that three-pointer because he didn't have to chase James Harden around the entire game.
And I think the Bulls are hoping that Paul Zipser turns into that 3-and-D guy at some point, but he's certainly got a long way to go before he really gets to the point where he can do that consistently.
Yeah, I don't know that he's a classic 3-and-D guy anyway. He mentioned in Germany that basically he played with the 2-3-4 at times, and now he considers himself, he's obviously played 3 and 4 pretty much, the only thing he's played for the Bulls, I think. There's a few times they went a little small with him at power forward or seemingly there in a mix of others.
You know who would be a perfect fit on this roster and would fill a lot of their needs? Etuan Moore.
You just had to, didn't you?
I mean, it's right there.
Yeah, like, I mean, hypothetically, is this revisionist history what they should have done in free agency?
Well, no, because we were saying at the time that they should have re-signed Etuan for his
price. It 3 years, 27 or something? 4 years. 34?
434, I think.
Yeah, it was reasonable, especially in the expanding market. And Etuan's a guy that could have started and flanked Jimmy or come off the bench and not complained either way, depending on what you wanted to do with Jerry Grant or young point guard X in this scenario. But, yeah, that's a lot. I made the joke, too. Did the Bulls trade for campaign just to motivate Jerry Grant? Because the campaign era is still not working. He just doesn't play well with Jimmy.
No, he has not been good, and he's just like I don't know what he's good. Like, he's knocked down a few 3-pointers since coming to the Bulls, but you know he gets blown by on defense. He isn't, you know, he doesn't seem like a great passer, but I don't know.
Fred Hoiberg hinted after the game he's willing to make rotation changes. I feel like he's done that for how many games are we in now? 64. There's no more empty threats or anything he can do really. It's. Look, Fred wasn't good in this game either. There were not, I shouldn't say not prepared, but when the same things keep happening, a large portion of that falls on the coaches. That's his responsibility. That's his burden too. They had some really bad out of timeout plays. Any time there's an out of a timeout play and whoever they inbound the ball to just ends up holding it, it's probably a bad play already. It's not good. It's not going anywhere. That falls on him. At the same time, I don't know what more he can do. The post-game press conference, which we watched on the live stream, was interesting. Nick Friedel of ESPN.com, after a good 4-minute scrum or so, 5-minute scrum with the reporters asking about the game, asked Hoiberg, "Do you think the players got your message in the locker room after the game to keep fighting?" Because game ends, coach usually says a few quick words. I mean, he's not sitting in there. Like, these guys want to go eat, they want to go out, they want to hang out with their friends. They're probably flying back from Orlando on this night. But in general, post-game, when the coach talks post-game, he just gets the players out of there, gets media obligations done. But they still say a quick word. And Friedel asks, "Fred, are these guys accepting your message to keep fighting?" He's like, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah." And he just raced off away from the postgame show. I'm like, there was no extrapolating. There was no detail. There was no thought into it. Fred looks miserable. Dwayne Wade and the Bulls, Jimmy Butler, none of these people look like these losses matter to them on a nightly basis. It just happens, and then they go through the motions, and it happens again, and they go through the motions, and it's just a repetitive cycle. And none of that gives you confidence that the Bulls can make a playoff push, in my mind, at least.
It's not great. And the Eastern Conference, you know, some of these other teams, Miami, Milwaukee, Charlotte, these teams have all been doing better lately, which the whole crux of my argument that the Bulls were still going to make the playoffs was that these other teams were just as much of a mess as they are. And so these other teams are kind of getting their act together a little bit.
The Heat, I think, are 20-4 since
22-4 now.
22-4 since some date X, which is the best run in the NBA over that.
Well, they had
span.
That 13-game winning streak.
They've still been playing good basketball in general. And look, I'm not a momentum guy. I always get annoyed when people explain momentum as a reason for someone winning or losing a basketball game. I think there are a few cases where momentum matters. Like, to me, it's more confidence. And I think people use momentum as a replacement word for confidence and good vibes.
Uh-huh.
I totally believe in confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the Heat have confidence in what they're doing right now. Momentum, if you want to call it that, I'm cool with it.
And they've got a coach that they all buy into.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, too. The Bulls, there's little evidence of the players buying into what Hoiberg's selling right now, if we had an idea exactly what that was. Anyway, he wants them to push in transition, and then they throw up a 5 spot in the transition points department in this game. Like, you should at least... I mean, I guess the Magic are theoretically young and athletic, too, so maybe you can't run on them, but... It's a team built on three-point shooting and pushing the pace, and they're just awful at both for long stretches. And
so is Nico just done now?
Oh, thank God you remembered that. Fill him in, Swag.
Nico just didn't play.
DMP, coach's decision. Healthy. It's fourth time this year. But Joffrey Laverne got minutes because Fred said he'd been good recently. Not entirely sure. He hadn't played in a game long enough to be good, so I'm assuming this is traced back to those all-world Hall of Fame practices the Bulls hold that no one sees but are, what, highly cited and widely praised and also often criticized externally, I think. Joffrey Laverne, I mean, he looked good. I'd like to see him do that against a team that's not bad at basketball. He hit a three-pointer, cut to the rim at the right time several times, and generally looked... like, he knew what he was doing, contributing at 7 points. But still so many holes for the Bulls. This, I mean, is that just the writing on the wall, though, for Nico? Like, he's gone. They're just renounce him on day one of free agency, not even throw out a cap hold on him and take up cap space or what?
I mean, I would be absolutely stunned if he gets brought back next year at this point. He's completely lost the trust of the coaching staff. They very openly tried to shop him before the deadline. They couldn't get anything for him. I think the writing is just kind of on the wall at this point. And it's not a good look that at this point, against a team as bad as the Magic, like, this would have had written all over it. Like, Nico gets in there against this bad Orlando team and just lights it up and hits 7 three-pointers, and then suddenly it's, oh, Nico's back. You know, Nico's out of the slump. Is Nico going to have another great March like he did in his rookie year in 2015? The fact that he's not even getting on the floor in this game, it's not a good sign.
The... March 2015, Nico was named
legendary,
the Rookie of the Month, correct?
Yeah.
And I believe he led the NBA in fourth quarter scoring that year. Yep. Was among the leaders. That was the high point of his career. There's no doubt about that. You can trace back to his second year, Hoiberg's rookie season, the appendectomy that went wrong in the follow-up procedure that had him cut a lot of weight, scared him, kept him out, what, over a month or so, I think. Big setback for him. There's no doubt about that. I think off the top of my head, he was playing better basketball right before that, too, if my memory serves me correct. But how much of that Nico being a non-entity and not a difference maker for the Bulls, that's a swing and a miss in the front office department, but it's also an indictment of the Hoiberg coaching staff, because Nico's best basketball came during the final full month of the regular season. I mean, the final full month that, excuse me, penultimate full month that Tom Thibodeau was coaching the Bulls was Nico's best basketball.
Yeah.
And he hasn't come anything close to it since.
And you have to also keep in mind, he's had every opportunity to do that. He was given the starting job at the beginning of last season. He had every opportunity to win the starting job over Taj Gibson this training camp, but he was so bad in the preseason games that they were kind of forced to go with Taj just on merit.
I have an assignment for you at Summer League.
Me? Okay. Sure.
Yeah. You need to get the scoop on what people think and maybe ask the one and only Tom Thibodeau straight up. What did they do so well that month and toward the end of his rookie year that worked with Nico? What happened? Because I don't know. Maybe it was just a flash on the radar, you know? Maybe they caught gold for a month. Maybe there was something there in the way Tibbs utilized him. Because I don't remember Nico being a difference maker in that playoff series or anything either. I have to go back and look, but it's not hopping out.
Well, he was hurt for a couple of those games in Milwaukee.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, the Cavs series between the Bulls and Cavs, that was just so loaded with so many storylines, so many different directions, wild endings and big plays.
David Blatt comparing his own job to a fighter pilot.
David Blatt almost calling timeout and putting the Cavs down 3-1. LeBron hitting a game-winning shot. Derrick Rose hitting a game-winning shot. That was great stuff. That was just great.
That was one of the more memorable series we've ever covered.
Absolutely epic. But
I don't think the Bulls are going to have any second-round playoffs. Even if they make the playoffs, I don't think they're going to get to the second round anytime
soon. It won't be that fun if they do get there. But you need to find out, what does Tibbs think? What did Nico, what worked so well? Maybe we should just go back and look up our old stories, actually, and see what the comments were from Nico at the time. And maybe that's what we do in the exit interviews with Nico, too. You know what I mean? Or here in the coming weeks when the writing's on the wall. Because Nico's been pretty open about his future, saying on multiple occasions, you know, earlier in the year he said, I want to stay in Chicago. My family loves it. He was asked by Casey Johnson of Trip, do you ever consider going back to Europe, even? And Nico's like, I understand that's a great, this paraphrasing, but he said, I understand that's a great lifestyle, but I think I belong in the NBA and I like it here. At the time, he said he wanted to come back to the Bulls. The trade deadline, I mean, you could tell he was a little bummed by that, just because he knew he got shopped and then admitted, you know, like, this is what happens when you don't play as consistently as I need to. And he hasn't played more consistently since then. So I don't see right now the path to the Bulls bringing Nico back, obviously, but I'd also like to know where it went wrong, because the Nico and Doug McDermott, experiments, went totally awry, and the day of reckoning's basically come this season on both of them. Like, it seems like Doug already got traded off. Nico's about his time in Chicago's about to expire as a basketball player here. It's a huge black mark. On a couple different levels in the front office and coaching, and to the players too. And I'd like to remember and try to remember what used to work for Nico. So that's probably a conversation, John, for off season for dead periods. This one was another sad basketball night for the Bulls. They got James Harden coming to downtown on Friday. They lost in overtime, I believe, at Houston earlier in the year. Harden had a huge game.
That was the game without Jimmy.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch Jimmy guard Harden for stretches, though. We'll see if he does it the whole game. That's a lot to ask of anyone and still carry that offensive burden. But Bulls hoping Dwayne Wade obviously comes back. Did want to mention Rajon Rondo came back in this game against the Magic after sitting out previously with
Michael Carter-Williams, also DNP.
Yeah, he's really fallen off the map. We didn't even mention him until now.
No.
I don't think there's anything else we need to mention in this game that we didn't already touch on, because it was kind of just a repeat of the last few. So we'll keep you updated as always. You can follow Sean on Twitter at Hike, and follow myself at Cody Westerlund. Follow Locked On Bulls on Twitter, Facebook, by its name. Much appreciated. Email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And you should try to advertise with us, too.
That's right. If your company's interested in advertising to men between the ages of 18 and 54, then your company definitely should be advertising on our show. Our audience is 95% male, and 78% of our audience between the ages of 18 and 44. And recent surveys have shown that podcast listeners are 65% more willing to consider purchasing products they learned about from podcasts, and 60%, given equal price and quality, prefer to purchase from companies that advertise in their favorite podcasts. Our rates are very reasonable, so make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with any inquiries, and also subscribe to us. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends to subscribe, check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well, and we'll be back with you soon. Thanks for listening.